You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
The dust has settled on the interim budget of 2019, and now to the main event. How does it affect you and me? And are there certain stocks benefiting from the budget announcements? These are the questions we will address today. Make or break budget was the resounding theme peddled by all observers ahead of the interim budget. Before Piyush Goyal, presenting the budget in Arun Jaitley's leave of absence for medical reasons, rose to present the union budget for 2019, the questions that did the rounds were ranging from, will the Modi government present a populist budget in a last-ditch effort to woo voters, especially from the Hindi heartland who seem to have turned away from him in the recent state assembly elections? That question. Two, will there be cash sops to farmers and how will it impact fiscal deficit? Two, will this be a lame duck budget after all? Now, some of these questions have been answered, even as another question needs some more resolution. What is that question? Did 2017-2018 see the highest rates of unemployment in 45 years? A Business Standard report noted that the first full year after demonetization had a drastic impact on job numbers, unemployment rates of 6.1%, the highest in 45 years. The publication also went on to claim that the NSSO, that is the National Sample Survey Organization report, had been withheld by the government. Business Standard also claimed that two members of the NSSO who were not government officials, that is National Statistical Commission's acting chairman P.C. Mohanan and member J.V. Meenakshi, who is a professor at Delhi School of Economics, quit, citing, among other things, the government's decision to withhold the NSSO's report on employment for 2017-2018. For reference, unemployment rate in 2013-2014 was 4.9%. The promise of eradicating unemployment was one of the reasons the Modi government came to power in 2014, when the BJP manifesto claimed that India's labour force was the, quote, pillar of our growth. Of course, one must also acknowledge that measuring employment numbers in a country where a vast majority is employed in the informal sector is notoriously difficult. The Niti Aayog, on its part, came to defend Prime Minister Narendra Modi's record of creating jobs. At a press conference, Rajiv Kumar, Vice Chairman of Niti Aayog, said the NSSO report was a draft and had not been finalized by the government, and that the government decided to hold the report as it did not have the data for the comparable period. Not helping with the optics was also the fact that these reports surfaced on the same day that the government revised the GDP growth for 2016-2017, the year of demonetization, upwards by 100 basis points to 7.2%. Earlier, as you might recall, it had revised down the UPA-era growth numbers. While it is undeniable that India's growth rate remains robust, it is equally true that Indians from the working and lower middle classes are hurting, especially women and the young. According to the State of Working India 2018, a study conducted by the Centre for Sustainable Employment at Azim Premji University, which, quick aside, has been denied the Institute of Eminence status along with Ashoka, Jindal and other universities because, well, the Intelligence Bureau has flagged Mr. Premji for making, I kid you not, anti-Modi statements. Do read the piece on the print. Now, this study from the Azim Premji University has indicated that India's youth unemployment now stands at 16%, while women hold just 16% of jobs in the service sector. You will all, of course, recall that 23 million individuals, that is 2.3 crore individuals, applied for just 89,400 jobs advertised at the Indian Railways just last year. Or that grim story of how 7,000 applicants, many of them graduates in law and engineering, applied for 13 waiting jobs in the canteen at the Secretariat of the Government of Maharashtra. The robust growth we spoke of earlier clearly seems to only be positively impacting almost entirely those people already at the top. After the Business Standard reports came out, Rahul Gandhi called Modi the Führer, the BJP hit him back with a Mussolini, and primetime television exploded, and somewhere in the din, nuanced discussion died a quiet death in an unmarked grave. All major television channels carried this, the Business Standard report, as their lead story, except for one. Its lead, of course, had a hashtag that said, hashtag Congress attacks Hindus, and I will let you guess which that television channel was. It was important that we discuss this, albeit in minor detail, because the very next day after this report came out was the interim union budget. The highlights from the annual exercise of guiding the country safely on choppy financial seas are what we will discuss today, but of course, it is important also for us to remember that there are other things happening on the sidelines. This being an interim budget, by the way, is not quite like a union budget, but in many ways, it is more politically charged than a normal union budget is. My name is Rakesh Sharma, and these are the interim budget highlights, and what it holds for you and me is what we will talk about right here on Digging Deeper with Money Control.
The Deep Dive podcast series, highlights from the budget and what it means to you and me.
The interim budget only covers that period until a new government takes office and isn't typically used to make major announcements like tax changes, for example. But there is no law that prevents the current dispensation from making the changes they wish to make in the run-up to May. And some of the measures, as announced by Mr. Goyal in the lower house of the parliament, seem to indicate just that. Very quickly, some big highlights. Mr. Goyal started off by saying, and I quote, "I am deeply conscious of the absence of Arun Jaitley and wished him a speedy recovery, as do we." He then spoke of the achievements of the current administration, claiming right at the outset that, quote, "I can proudly say that India is solidly back on the growth track," unquote. Crediting the government with helping families save money by reducing, quote, "the back-breaking inflation of 10.1% of the UPA era," Mr. Goyal claimed that the Modi era average inflation of 4.6% was lower than the inflation during the tenure of any other government. The government, of course, revised fiscal deficit estimate for FY19 to 3.4% of the GDP, compared with the budget estimate of 3.3%. Continuing with the report card, the finance minister said India has achieved over 98% rural sanitation coverage. He said about 5.45 lakh villages have been declared open defecation free. He said that the government will add 2 lakh education seats with rollout of additional reservation. FY19 food subsidy spend was 1.7 lakh crore rupees. FY20 Pradhan Mantri Gram Sadak Yojana spend was 19,000 crore rupees. Mr. Goyal said the government had constructed 1.53 crore houses so far. And speaking of the big burning issue of the Indian banking sector, that is of course the non-performing assets, Mr. Goyal said the UPA era was primarily responsible for the debacle, and that under the current administration, the Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code had to an extent been effective in rectifying the problem, claiming that about 3 lakh crore rupees had been recovered thus far. He also expressed confidence that all banks would exit the RBI's prompt corrective action framework. As Gaurav Chaudhary noted on Money Control, he presented a stirring account of the Modi government's economic and reform policies, generously peppering his 100-minute speech with details of signature initiatives such as Ayushman Bharat, Pradhan Mantri Jan Aushadhi Yojana, Make in India, Jan Dhan Scheme, Startup India, Mudra, and the Insolvency and Bankruptcy Code. Also receiving praise from the man were the Real Estate Regulation Act, that is RERA, the Benami Properties Act, and the Fugitive Economic Offenders Bill. LEDs, apparently, have also saved 50,000 crore rupees for the Indian government. The scheme to provide LED bulbs to households across the country has led to annual savings of up to 50,000 crore rupees in electricity bills, said Mr. Goyal. Now that we did not know. Now let's start with the big announcements. We'll be talking about 5 in detail. We start things off with the Pradhan Mantri Kisan Samman Nidhi, 6,000 rupees to 12 crore farmer families. Now direct income transfer to small and marginal farmers with holdings up to 2 hectares was among the big announcements of the budget. Farmer distress, exacerbated due to drop in food prices, has been one of the overarching political themes of last year, resulting in large protest marches and perhaps even the loss suffered by the BJP in the key states of Madhya Pradesh, Rajasthan and Chhattisgarh. This Nidhi, that is the Pradhan Mantri Kisan Samman Nidhi, will cost the government 75,000 crore rupees in FY20, with the government providing 20,000 crore rupees in the current year. Among the salient features of this scheme are, number one, support of 6,000 rupees per year would be provided to farmers with holdings up to 2 hectares, taking place in 3 equal installments of 2,000 rupees each. The scheme will be fully funded by the government. The transfers would start retrospectively from December 2018, and 12 crore farmer families are expected to benefit from this scheme. Devendra Pant, chief economist at India Ratings, speaking to Bloomberg Quint, said the allocated target for the farm income support will work out at about 52 basis points of the gross domestic product, that is GDP. Bloomberg Quint further noted, Arun Singh, lead economist at Dun & Bradstreet, said the move will give farmers some confidence in the times of crisis. If implemented in a time-bound manner, this will also help ignite rural consumption, which otherwise is muted, he said. Arun Singh, however, expressed expressed concerns over the fiscal space in FY20. That was agreed by Jean Fang as well, Associate Managing Director, Sovereign Risk Group at Moody's Investor Service, who said the increased fiscal outlay for the Direct Income Support Scheme and subsidized agriculture loans are likely to boost the rural economy through consumption in the near term, but will have a fiscal cost. Great harvests have come with a low price to pay for the customer, but a high price for the farmer to pay. Despite the minimum support price initiative of the government, issues relating to procurement have led several farmers to sell to private buyers at much lower costs. As we've spoken about on an earlier podcast, the issues dogging the Indian farmer are several. Loan waivers and the direct transfer of cash may or may not solve them. Unless there are concrete and sustainable measures taken to address the issues of rising fertilizer costs, high rural unemployment, poor irrigation, better and more efficient crop insurance apparatus, comprehensive farm sector reform is but a distant dream if we don't take care of all of these things. Just giving money to people is not going to work. According to the last national sample survey in 2014, about a quarter of Indian farmers live below the poverty line, while over half of the farming households remain in debt, with several resorting to suicide due to their inability to pay back the loans taken. How this scheme is received by the farmer community will be clearer in the coming days. In other SOPs to the farming community, farmers affected by natural calamities to get 2% interest subvention and an additional 3% interest subvention upon timely repayment. 2% interest subvention to farmers who pursue animal husbandry, fisheries jobs, also given through the Kisan credit cards. So, first prime and focus were, of course, the big electoral chunk, that is the farmers, the big Pradhan Mantri Kisan Samman Nidhi. Next up, the big news that a lot of middle-class India heard to great relief: no tax on income up to 5 lakh rupees. The house erupted in chants of Modi, Modi, Modi when what was perhaps the most crowd-pleasing of all announcements was made by the government. Individual taxpayers with income of up to 5 lakh rupees will get a full tax rebate. However, the existing tax rates to continue for now until the next budget. Simply put, those who earn a gross income of 6.5 lakh rupees will not have to pay tax. The move is expected to benefit 3 crore middle-class taxpayers to the tune of around 18,000 crore rupees. Standard deduction has been raised from 40,000 rupees to 50,000 rupees. Amrish Shah of Deloitte India, in response to the move, said, and I quote, "The release in cash outflow on account of tax reduction to middle-income earners will lead to more consumption and fuel growth in the economy." Mr. Goyal said in his speech, "Small taxpayers, especially the middle-class, salary earners and senior citizens, need certainty in their minds at the beginning of the year about taxes. Therefore, proposals related to such class of persons should not wait." He said, "Our aim is to reduce the tax burden on the middle class." Of course, the salaried middle class is also among the largest vote blocks for the Modi government. On the issue of LTCG, that is long-term capital gain, which was a huge subject in last year's budget, in what might be seen as a relief to those seeking to sell real estate, the finance minister, the interim finance minister, announced that the long-term capital gain tax arising out of the sale of a property up to 2 crore rupees could be used to buy 2 properties. Currently, individuals can only reduce their long-term capital gains on sale of property by buying a single house. The caveat here is, of course, that an individual can only claim this extended benefit once in their lifetime. So all in all, a good budget for the middle-income, middle-class taxpayer. Again, a prominent vote block for the Modi government. Next up, the MGNREGA, 60,000 crore rupees allocated under this scheme. The Mahatma Gandhi National Rural Employment Guarantee Scheme, which is the UPA government's flagship program, is one of the key schemes aimed at rural development. The government has budgeted 60,000 crore rupees under this scheme for the fiscal year 2020. The National Rural Employment Guarantee Act provides at least 100 days of manual work with daily wages to every household in rural India. Last year, the government had set aside 55,000 crore rupees in what was until then the highest allocation of resources under the scheme. Since FY17, the allocation under the MGNREGA has only gone up. FY17 was 38,500 crore rupees, FY18 48,000 crore rupees, FY19 55,000 crore rupees, and in this interim budget 60,000 crore rupees. The eventual expenditures in each of these years have also crossed allocations each year. The 19,000 crore rupees allocated for construction of rural roads under the Gram Sadak Yojana is also one of the SOPs indicated and aimed at the rural sector. Next up, the FY20 fiscal deficit is set at 3.4%. The central government's fiscal deficit for 2018-2019 settled at 3.4% of the GDP. This is marginally higher than the target of 3.3% that the government had set for itself. For FY20, the government has said that the fiscal deficit will remain unchanged at 3.4% of the GDP. This is the second year in a row that the government has missed its fiscal deficit target. It could have been better, but for the additional setting aside of 75,000 crore rupees for farm income support scheme, said Mr. Goyal. The fiscal deficit numbers need to be kept a close eye on, especially in this election year. Fitch Ratings had earlier said on Monday that higher pre-election spending could risk a second consecutive year of fiscal slippage relative to the government's targets and would further delay plans to reduce the high general government fiscal deficit and debt burden. The 3% fiscal deficit target has remained but a pipe dream. Having said that, over the course of the Modi era, the fiscal deficit has come down from 4.1% in 2014-2015 to 3.4% this last fiscal year. Another big announcement, Pradhan Mantri Shramayogi Mandhan, or the pension scheme. Pradhan Mantri Shramayogi Mandhan is a pension scheme launched by the government for workers in the unorganized sector. Mr. Goyal announced that workers in the unorganized sector earning up to 15,000 rupees a month shall receive a monthly pension of up to 3,000 rupees after the age of 60. A worker at the age of 18 will have to contribute 55 rupees a month, while those above 29 years will have to contribute 100 rupees every month. The government is to match the contributions. In the current fiscal year, 500 crore rupees have been allocated under the scheme. The immediate question that is being asked by analysts is, how is the scheme any different from the Atal Pension Yojana? Indeed, the new scheme is a restructured version of the Atal Yojana, also co-contributed by the government. Atal Pension Yojana came into effect in June 2015 and allowed subscribers between the age of 18 and 40 years to receive pension after reaching the age of 60. Now, under the Atal Yojana, the beneficiaries were supposed to contribute for at least 20 years to avail the pension benefit. As Bloomberg Quint noted, the minimum monthly contribution for a subscriber who joined the scheme at 18 years was 42 to 210 rupees. And for those who joined at 40 years, it was 291 to 1,454 rupees to receive a fixed amount of 1,000 to 5,000 rupees monthly pension. The new pension scheme offers 3,000 rupees per month benefit at a minimum contribution of 55 rupees for those who joined at 18 years, compared with a monthly contribution of 126 under the earlier scheme to avail the same benefits. So that's the difference between the Atal Pension Yojana and this Pradhan Mantri Shramayogi Mandhan scheme. The central government's co-contribution under the new scheme also increased to 100% of the subscriber's total contribution from the earlier 50% or 1,000 rupees per annum that it paid under the Atal Pension Yojana. About 78.42 lakh beneficiaries had enrolled under the Atal Pension Yojana as of 2017 December 20th. Now the budget allocation fell from 200 crore rupees for 2016 to 155 crore rupees in 2018-2019 as per the budget estimate. So that was another of the big announcements made during the budget. Pradhan Mantri Shramayogi Mandhan, the pension scheme for workers in the unorganized sector. Now, a summary of the other big features announced in the budget. Let's start with tax exemption on investments. Individuals with gross income up to 6.5 lakh rupees, like I said earlier, will not need to pay any tax if they make investments in provident funds and prescribed equities. Capital gains tax exemptions under Section 54 to be available up to 2 crore rupees. Like I said, capital gains exemption to be made available on two house properties as opposed to one property in the previous regulation. TDS threshold for home rent increased from 1.8 lakh rupees to 2.4 lakh rupees. Interest income up to 40,000 rupees in post offices and banks made tax-free. Processing of IT returns will take place within 24 hours and refunds will be paid immediately, according to Mr. Goyal. An anonymized tax system. In the next 2 years, almost all assessment and verification of IT returns will be done electronically and without any intervention by officials, said Mr. Goyal. Now, what is the impact on the education sector according to the budget? Finance Minister Piyush Goyal increased the allocation for the education sector by 12.2% to 93,847.64 crore rupees in the interim budget. According to the expenditure budget documents, Department of School Education and Literacy has been allocated 56,386.63 crores, that's about 56,000 crores, while Department of Higher Education has been given about 37,500 crore rupees. Now, the impact on the FMCG sector, the fast-moving consumer goods sector, that is FMCG, is likely to reap the benefits of the government's thrust on the farm sector. Announced in the Union Budget of 2019-2020, the FMCG and retail industry have given a thumbs up to the budget as it will bring in more money in the hands of the consumers and have termed the budget a consumption-oriented budget. More on this a little while later. The FMCG sector is happy with the budget. And now the defense sector. When is the defense sector ever unhappy with any budget? As in most countries, notably the United States, and whether or not an entirely defensible idea, the defense sector occupies a lion's share in the budget of any country. In the United States, for example, the defense budget for 2017 was $610 billion. Now that is more than the combined military spending of China, Russia, Saudi Arabia, India, France, United Kingdom, and Japan put together. These budgets, all of these defense budgets, military spending in these countries stood at $578 billion and still $32 billion short of America's military spending in 2017. Now this year, in India, the Indian government increased the defense budget to over 3 lakh crore rupees. The government will provide additional funds for defense if needed. Mr. Goyal said, "We have disbursed 35,000 crore rupees under the OROP scheme in the last few years." A happy year for the defense sector, like every other year. And finally, what were some of the social welfare schemes announced? The government is to build 1 lakh digital villages for the welfare of farmers and for doubling their income. Historic decision was taken to increase the MSP by 1.5 times the production cost for all 22 crops, said Mr. Goyal. To ensure cleaner fuel and health assurance, we embarked upon the Pradhan Mantri Ujjwala Yojana, a program to give 8 crore free LPG connections to rural households. 6 crore connections have already been given away, claimed Mr. Goyal. Committee under the Niti Aayog to set up for denotified nomadic and semi-nomadic communities, said Mr. Goyal. Now, that 6 crore number of LPG connections, some other sources will tell you that it's 5.5 crores, so it's a range of 5.5 to 6 crore LPG connections. With that said, what are the hopes and dreams that the government has for the future of the country? Mr. Goyal also laid down the Modi government's Vision 2030 plan, focused around the aspiration to make India a $10 trillion economy in the next decade. He listed what the administration called 10 importunate dimensions. Now, these 10 dimensions of Vision 2030 are as follows. Number one, to build physical and social infrastructure for a $10 trillion economy and to provide ease of living. Digital India to reach every sector of the economy. Now, that's dimension one. Number two, making India a pollution-free nation. Number three, generating massive employment built upon the Make in India program to develop grassroots-level clusters. Number four, clean rivers. Number five, powering India's coastline growth through the development of port and sea freight industry. Number six, developing a space program named Gaganyaan. India has become the launchpad for satellites of the world, so we need to develop a space program called Gaganyaan. Anyone reminded of Space Force? Number seven, making India self-sufficient in food and exporting to the world while producing food in the most organic ways. Number eight, aiming at a healthy society and an environment of health assurance. Number nine, to work towards a distress-free health and wellness system. And number 10, minimum government, maximum governance with a proactive and friendly bureaucracy. With the contents of the budget done, how did the market and how did the industry react to the budget? The Indian markets had a bit of a roller coaster ride of reactions on Budget Day. The tax relief announced for salaried employees took the markets on a huge high, with the BSE Sensex at one point rising as much as 520 points. But the digestion of the fine print somewhat dented sentiment soon after. As Shishir Asthana of Money Control noted, the relief on income tax is applicable for employees with a salary of up to 5 lakh rupees. However, even those with a salary of up to 10 lakh rupees can benefit by taking advantage of various exemptions like 80C, 80D, deduction on house loan interest, etc. But this revelation acted as a dampener for the market, which started falling and at one point was in the negative territory. Part of the reason for the fall was also in the fine print, especially the borrowing part. There's a sharp jump in the government borrowing program for next year, as against an expectation of 6.5 lakh crore rupees, the government is expected to borrow 7.6 lakh crore rupees. Bond markets reacted to this news flow, and so did banking sector indices. NSE Bank Nifty was down by 209 points that day, down by nearly 450 points from its high. The rise in the interest rate on account of higher borrowing by the government will affect all sectors of the economy and not only banking stocks, said Shishir Asthana. Now, the real estate sector may end up a beneficiary of the interim budget as it has received direct and indirect benefits from the government. Shishir Asthana said notional rent on the second self-occupied house has been done away with, while the TDS threshold of rent has been increased from 1.8 lakh rupees to 2.4 lakh rupees. Rollover of capital gains for Section 54 to be increased from one residential house to two residential houses for capital gains of up to 2 crore rupees, like we have discussed twice before. Also for affordable housing, deduction under 801B8 has been extended by one more year. Finally, the builders have been given some relief by extending their exemption, that is notional income on unsold inventory, from 1 year to 2 years. No surprise then that the NSE realty sector was up 1.25% during the day of the budget. The budget evoked reactions that could be summed up in one sound: meh. No one was particularly ecstatic and no one was particularly morose. First, the extremes. Finance Minister Arun Jaitley tweeted, and I quote, "The budget is unquestionably pro-growth, fiscally prudent, pro-farmer, pro-poor, and strengthens the purchasing power of the Indian middle class." Rahul Gandhi said, and I quote, "Dear No More," that is Narendra Modi, "No More, 5 years of your incompetence and arrogance has destroyed the lives of our farmers. Giving them 17 rupees a day is an insult to everything they stand and work for. Hashtag Akhri Jumla Budget." Adding to the Congress voice was former Finance Minister P. Chidambaram, who tweeted, "It was not a vote on account, it was an account for votes." Anand Mahindra, ever so quick with the tweet, said, and I quote, "I was bracing for a populist, profligate budget driven by election panic. I'm just grateful that the reliefs to the key middle class and farmer segments were delivered in a measured way without risking bankruptcy of the economy. This was a controlled pump priming exercise," unquote. Siddharth Roy Kapoor, president of the Producers Guild of India, reacting to a film industry specific announcement that I didn't tell you about, said, and I quote, "We are delighted that the immense contribution of Indian cinema towards employment generation in the country has been acknowledged and applauded in Parliament during the presentation of the Union Budget. The announcement of a single window clearance mechanism for Indian filmmakers filming within India is a significant step and has the potential to play a huge role in boosting tourism in the country. The amendments in the anti-camcording provisions will support the industry's growth by curtailing illegal recordings of films in cinema halls and will go a long way towards reducing piracy," unquote. Mark Mobius of Mobius Capital Partners said measures by the government could move the GDP numbers up by 0.5%, while Ramesh Damani said something prophetic that has since come true. He said markets will test the 11,000 plus level pre-elections, with the leading real estate players will do well from here on, unquote. Deepak Parekh, chairman of HDFC, said, and I quote, "Not worried about the fiscal deficit or capital account deficit. A fiscal deficit 3.5% of the GDP with over 7% growth rate should be reasonable," unquote. Now, mutual fund houses across the country were also welcoming of the budget. We're carrying a piece about just the same on Money Control, so do take a look at that. But many of them waited for the outcome of the Monetary Policy Committee meeting that is going to come out on Thursday for further clarity, and indeed the full budget after the elections. And finally, which stocks could benefit from the budget? So listen up and listen up carefully. Well, the benefits of the budget were largely devoted to salaried employees, farmers and the MSME sector, as we have just about discovered now after about 25 minutes of listening to me. That reads like a pretty standard pre-election budget. It did not, of course, have specific SOPs for the investor community, although it is a silver lining, thank God, that the fiscal deficit number did not exceed too much from the target, and the measures announced are likely to support earnings of companies in the FMCG, agriculture, real estate and healthcare companies. Now, MK Global, calling the budget's stance reflationary, has maintained its Nifty target range of 11,000 to 10,400, but continues to remain cautious on mid and small cap stocks. It is overweight on IT services, pharmaceuticals and BFSI, primarily private banks, and specialty chemicals, equal weight on auto and auto ancillaries, consumers, oil and gas, metals and mining, and fertilizers and agrochemicals, and underweight on capital goods, construction and infrastructure, cement and telecom. Now, that view is not necessarily shared by some of the other people that we've spoken to. Morgan Stanley remains positive on what the budget had to offer to developers and homeowners, that is the property sector. It welcomed the appointment of a committee of ministers to examine GST on housing, which is at an effective rate of 12% now. It prefers mid-cap stocks in the housing and real estate sectors, namely Oberoi Realty, Shobha and Prestige. Each of these has an overweight rating from them. Morgan Stanley Family said, assuming a 1.5 to 2% rental yield, this can result in a 60 to 70 basis points as a percentage of sale value of tax savings. In terms of stocks, DLF and Oberoi have high complete or near complete inventory and could benefit the most. That is Oberoi Realty, Shobha and Prestige as far as Morgan Stanley is concerned. Mustafa Nadeem of Epic Research thinks the budget may prove useful for investors in the auto sector, with the change in the import duty for electric vehicle components being cited by him as a key change that might be a big boost to the EV players. In the bid to the country becoming more and more electric on wheels, this might prove to be a good time to invest in well-established players in the auto sector, he said, like Hero MotoCorp, Mahindra & Mahindra, and Ashok Leyland. Considering, of course, the increase in allocation of resources to the Pradhan Mantri Gram Sadak Yojana and the rise in total capital and development expenditure of railways, that is from 1.4 trillion rupees to 1.6 trillion rupees, HDFC Securities believes that the construction sector could benefit from the budget. KNR Construction, PNC Infra, Larsen & Toubro, that is L&T, Sadbhav Engineering, Ashok Buildcon and Dilip Buildcon are their choices for the biggest beneficiaries of the budget. Now, we have discovered through our understanding of the budget that the PM Awas Yojana has had a bump of 2,300 crore rupees from its previous allocation of 16,000 crore rupees. Now it's at 18,300 crore rupees. Now states, we know, are also lagging behind in the target of constructing 1 crore households in rural areas by the end of FY19. The Prime Minister Pradhan Mantri Ujjwal Yojana has been extended to a total of 8 crore households, and the government claims to have provided new LPG connections already to 5.9 crore households and aims at attaining the 8 crore mark by the FY20. And there is also, before I forget, the PM Saubhagya Yojana, which aims at 100% electrification by the end of FY19. Now, these aims, in addition to the tax ops given to the middle class and therefore an expected rise in urban discretionary spending, might prove to be a big boost for companies involved in things like cables, fan, lighting, consumer durables sectors. Because if you have money to spend, you will spend it. And the belief now, because of the tax ops given to the middle income section, that they might be buying stuff. So HDFC Securities also bets big on Jubilant Foodworks, TTK Prestige, Hawkins Havels India, Crompton Electric Consumer, V-Guard and Symphony.
The Deep Dive podcast series, highlights from the budget and what it means to you and me.
So sit back and make hay while the sun shines. The stock market is in an upswing. The sentiment is good. The mood is jubilant. But this is an election year, and who knows what to truly expect. But if you want to make a few investment decisions while the iron is hot and the weather cold, hopefully some of those names might come in handy. Thank you for joining us.
This has been a Digging Deeper podcast, and you have been listening to Money Control.